Hello and welcome to my final economic RBA and property update for 2022. It's another huge month of data and data insights as we close out the year. My key themes this month include the slowing of interest rate hikes in the US, the case for pausing interest rates here in Australia going forward, and how the property market will finish out 2022 and begin 2023. So let's start the December update with an updated forecast from the OECD. In its November 2022 outlook, the OECD slashed economic growth forecast for its members by half to 0.8 of 1% in 2023, compared with its 1.6% forecast that it had in its June outlook. The US is now expected to grow at only 0.5 of 1% in 2023, down from a 1.2% expected in their June outlook. China's growth was also revised down to 4.6% in 23 from 4.9%. And the UK economy is now forecast to be in recession, as it's now forecast to contract by negative 0.4 in 2023 before stabilising and growing by only 0.2 in 2024. The OECD said its central scenario is not for a global recession, but a significant growth slowdown for the economy in 2023. Now, on that positive note, let's take a closer look at some of the economies, as we always do, starting with the US of A. The big news out of America was the Fed Reserve's Governor Jerome Powell comments relating to a pivot for the Fed to small increases of 50 basis points from the current 75 basis point steps they've been taking of late. And this could happen as early as this month's review of their cash rate. His comments led to a mini rally on US equity markets, as the market's always looking for any good news. And as equity markets try to do, they are forward looking. So this move in the minds of the markets are a possible sign that we might be past the worst of it. Now, that said, a comment by St. Louis's Fed's boss, James Bullard, about markets underestimating the chances that the Fed will need to be more aggressive next year, suggesting that rate hikes may go all the way into 2024. Now, this is probably a good point to stop and remind everyone that the Fed will raise their cash rates higher than we'll need to do here in Australia. That's because their cash rate isn't linked as strongly to households as our cash rate here is. In the US, most mortgage borrowers take out 25 or 30 year fixed mortgages. Yet our mortgage rates are variable or short-term fixed rates here, which means when the RBA plays with the cash rate here, they have a more immediate effect on the economy compared to the US. So they'll usually have to take their cash rate higher in attempting to slow their economy and slowing their overall stimulus in the economy than we do here. So that's an important message that we need to keep reminding ourselves of. Now, let's take a look at the US inflation data. The producer's price index for final demand increased by 0.2 of 1% in October, lower than the 0.4% increase the market was expecting. In annual terms, the PPI increased by 8%, while the core PPI, which excludes volatile items, increased by 6.7%. Both reads were significantly lower than what the market was expecting at 8.3% and 7.2% respectively. Furthermore, the outcome was lower than the 8.4% read recorded in annual terms to September. In CPI headline terms, inflation rose by 0.4 in October. This was in line with the rise in September, but was lower than consensus expectations of a 0.6% increase. In annual terms, headline inflation increased to 7.7% in October, down from 8.2% in September. This was below census expectations of 7.9%. Core inflation, which is trim mean inflation, rose by 0.3 of 1%. This was down from 0.6 in September and below consensus expectations of 0.5. This led to the annual pace slowing to 6.3% from the peak so far in the cycle of 6.6% in September. This was also below consensus expectations of 6.5%. So a good inflation read. Looking at the consumer story in the US, we saw retailers discounted heavily on Black Friday sales to try to clear out old inventories. But the take-up by consumers was not as high as businesses had hoped. Adobe Analytics estimated that e-commerce spending on Friday rose 2.3% on last year to a reading of $9.12 billion. And that's the total increase. And that probably had more to do with price increases of goods than actual increase in the volume of sales. In terms of consumer sentiment, we saw that the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, we got a reading of 56.8 in November, up from a preliminary reading of 54.7 and stronger than expectations for a reading of 55 even. Despite the upward revision, the outcome remained the lowest in 4 months and well below average levels. On the business front in the US, we saw the unemployment rate ticked up slightly to a reading of 3.7 in October from 3.5% in September. Consensus had expected a smaller rise in unemployment to 3.6%. The result suggests while there is still work to be done for the Fed, the aggressive hikes in interest rates implemented thus far, maybe we are starting to translate into a slower labour market. Average hourly earnings increased 0.4 of 1% in October, accelerating from the 0.3 monthly pace recorded over the previous 2 months. However, average earnings growth slowed to 4.7% in annual terms from 5% in September, meeting markets' expectations. This was the softest annual increase in hourly earnings in September of 2021, but remained well above the levels the Fed would consider necessary to bring inflation down. Manufacturing activity dipped in contraction for the first time since June 2020. The manufacturing PMI tumbled to 47.6 in November from 50.4 in October. This was weaker than expectations, which forecast a reading of a 50 even. Meanwhile, the contraction in service activity accelerated in November. The services PMI fell to 46.1 from 47.8 previously, making the softest reading since August. Finally, the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index fell to 91.3 in October. It is the 10th consecutive month below the 48-year average of 98. Weakness was broad-based, with 7 of the 10 indicators declining in the month. So in summary, the US economy is slowing and its economic performance is only going to get worse before it gets better. And that's not going to happen until the Fed is happy where the inflation trend story is heading and obviously getting inflation down. Looking at the People's Republic of China now, we see that China finds itself in an interesting time right now on the back of the growing frustrations and restrictions around the COVID-19 policies that they have there. We are seeing more protests against the current policy as the citizens of China watch other countries open up and allow general people movement and big events like the Soccer World Cup, yet they continue to be restricted by their government authorities. This civil unrest is definitely damaging from an economic standpoint, but it also has the risk of reputational damage for China. That said, unlike the rest of the world, China doesn't have the same inflation challenges that Western countries are currently experiencing, and as such, are able to continue to initiate further domestic stimulus to reboot their economy. Here's a look at the current inflation data out of China. Now, the producer's price index, the PPI, declined 1.3% over the year to October, reflecting a softening in global demand alongside tightening monetary policy. This was the softest reading since November 2020 and the first year-on-year decline in the PPI in nearly 2 years. On the CPI front, we saw that the consumer price index rose 2.1% over the year to October, down from a 2.8% annual increase in September. This was the softest annual rise in consumer price inflation since May and was noticeably softer than the consensus expectation, which centered on a 2.4% gain. Now, Western nations can only dream of a 2.8% interest rate reading right now. Now, given that inflation is not an issue, they do have the luxury of acting on monetary policy cuts in the reserve requirements ratio for banks, and this will help with lending liquidity. They've also eased restrictions on major listed property developers to allow them to start selling new shares and debt-funded obligations in an effort to help reboot the property sector, which is a critical growth component for the domestic Chinese economy.
Hey folks, real quick, I want to share with you that we are very active on socials, providing loads of free content, videos, and extra insights over and above the content on this show. And Ben and I would love to connect with you. So simply go to your favorite platform and search the Property Couch handle. That's all lowercase, one word, and we'll happily engage with you where you like to hang out. All right, now let's get back to the show.
Looking at some other data from China in the past month, we see that retail trade declined by 0.5 in annual terms to the end of October. This was the first decline in 5 months. It represents a sharp decline from the annual growth of 2.5% recorded in September. Industrial production expanded by 5% in annual terms to the end of October. This was slightly below market expectations of a 5.3% increase. The outcome is slower than the annual growth of 6.3% recorded in September. The Shenzhen services PMI declined to a reading of 48.4 in October from a 49.3 in September. This was below consensus expectations of an outcome of 49% even. This was the second consecutive month where activity in the services sector was in contractory territory. New orders were also in contractory territory. The Shenzhen Manufacturing Purchases Managers Index PMI landed in contractory territory also for a third consecutive month in October, despite improving on September's result. The manufacturing PMI rose to 49.2, beating consensus expectation for a reading of 48.5. In summary, China's economic story is now pinned to their COVID-19 management agenda. Keep a zero policy agenda, then their economy will continue to suffer. Adjust those restrictions, then their economy will perform better. But with less than 60% of their elderly population fully vaccinated, and with their local vaccines not as effective as other vaccines, they do run the very real risk of increased hospitalizations and an increase in death rates for their citizens if and when they do open up. So it is a challenging time for their government to work out what they want to do for their citizens over in China, but it's obviously impacting their economic story. Let's now turn to the Eurozone, and we saw the economic activity expanded by 0.2 of 1% over the September quarter. This was in line with market expectations. In annual terms, economic activity expanded by 2.1% to the end of September. It's very clear that economic activity is slowing in the Eurozone, and now we expect some negative quarters of GDP in the coming quarters, and a possible technical recession is a real possibility in the Eurozone. On their inflationary story, we saw price pressures accelerate as inflation in October came in higher than expected and rose to its highest annual level on record. Inflation jumped by 1.5% in October, accelerating from September's 1.2% pace and above consensus expectation for a gain of 1.2%. In annual terms, inflation surged to a record high of 10.7% over the year to October. This was up from 10% over the year to September and was above consensus expectations, which centered around a gain of 10.3%. On the interest rate front, and on the back of the high inflation read, we saw the ECB Governor Council members' stance to continue to raise interest rates until measures of underlying inflation begin to ease. It's expected that headline inflation to reach a record peak in the first half of 2023. Retail sales in the euro area were in line with expectations for September, rising by 0.4 in the month of September and contracting by 0.6 in the year to September. Let's now look at some of the other sentiment data in the Eurozone. We saw that investor confidence in the Eurozone increased in November, but remained in negative territory. The Eurozone Sintech Investor Confidence Index rose to negative 30.9 in November from a negative 38.3 in October. This was above consensus expectations of a negative 35. However, despite the increase, investor confidence remains in the doldrums and deeply entrenched in negative territory. The index has remained in negative territory since February when Russia invaded Ukraine. Looking at the Eurozone business data, we see the labour market showed signs of resilience in September, despite the regions continued to be affected by elevated inflationary pressures and also energy shocks. The unemployment declined slightly in September, falling to 6.6% from a revised 6.7% in August. Now, that was revised higher from an initial reading of 6.6%. Industrial production expanded by more than expected in September. Industrial production rose by 0.9 in September, beating consensus expectations for a 0.5 gain. This follows revised increase of 2% in August, revised higher from the initial reading of 1.5. In annual terms, industrial production rose by 4.9% in September, following the revised annual gain of 2.8% in August. This was also higher than consensus expectations of 3%. This is some positive news for the Eurozone, given the big challenges this group of countries is being faced with. These increases mean that there's a higher level of industrial production was at its highest level since 2017. Now, this business data has definitely a positive flavour to it, but we need to remember that it's lag data and the economic conditions are going to get even worse in the region. And that's why the ECB is going to have to keep lifting interest rates to get on top of their record high levels of inflation. So it's really clear that the Eurozone is going to go through a very tough 2023, as are most developed countries who are also battling the same levels of inflationary pressure. That wraps up looking abroad. Now let's turn our attentions back home. And we always start with the RBA decision. And the RBA board met today, and for the eighth consecutive month, they've raised the official cash rate. This month, they opted for another 25 basis points increase, and it takes the cash rate to 3.1% to close out 2022. The next big question really is, although we are certain that the RBA will pause the cash rate cycle in January, that's because they don't meet in January, the real question is going to be, what are they going to do in February? Will they now take a break and wait and see the full impacts of their sharp tightening policy and as they take effect, remembering that it takes up to 3 months for the cash rate changes to really start to hit household budgets? So what will they do next? Well, let me firstly make the case for a pause from this point forward, and then I'll make the case for a couple of further increases in the new year and look and play that out for you in terms of what that looks like. Okay, so here we go. Let's start with a case for a pause. So the first thing we're looking at is a soft landing. Now, the governor and the board have been really clear in their messaging that they are attempting a soft landing of the economic plane instead of a hard landing. Now, for that soft landing to occur, they need to look at the lag effect. And I mentioned earlier that the economists look at it takes up to 3 months for that really to take effect. So we need to wait and see what that lag effect is going to be in the reporting. And that's going to take, obviously, for the action and then the data to be collected, it's going to take several months after that. So the reason why they may argue for a pause from this point forward is to take a look at that data. Now, there are a couple of clues around that in terms of the governor's recent comments. He made some comments at a recent speech that he did at the CEDA, the CEDA annual address that he does. And he noted that policy lags are likely to be longer than usual in this cycle because of the larger than usual share of fixed mortgage rates, higher savings buffers, and the strong labour market. Now, if you also combine that with the recent release of the Financial Stability Review report, we can see some clues in there about what the RBA is thinking. And one of the stress tests that they've done inside that review is looking at household cash flows or free household cash flows in terms of the impact if the cash rate was to move to 3.6%. Now, the cash rate as of today has moved to 3.1%. But what we see in that analysis is that 15% of households will have no spare cash to cover any change in living costs if the cash rate went to 3.6%. Now, if we expand on that further, we can see that almost one third of borrowers would have their spare cash shrink between 40 and over 100%. So we've got that 15% that will be tapped out. But if we also expand that out, so one in three borrowing households are going to have a significant impact in terms of that spare cash flow. Now, that's the design ultimately. But what you want to be looking at here is if you're talking about a safe landing, these numbers wouldn't support a safe landing. So that stress testing of those household budgets wouldn't support a safe landing. In fact, what they potentially could create is a level of systemic risk in the property sector that would also be detrimental in terms of that. Now, my argument on here is that the property sector is too big as an asset class to fail in this country. So if they're trying to emulate a soft landing or facilitate a soft landing, it's going to be more difficult. Now, when you also combine that with the $500 billion of fixed rate loans that are going to expire in 2023, the RBA does need at some point to pause and see that play out in terms of what that does in terms of the economic consequences. So that is a very, very strong case to see a pause for rates in early 2023. Now, here's the case for interest rates to continue to increase in 2023. And it's a familiar story to what I've been talking about in the recent RBA updates that I've been giving. And it's all about the inflation remaining too high. So on the demand side, we're talking about consumer spending continuing to grow at levels that they're not happy with. Strong labor market, so full employment, which will see wage growth continue to accelerate. Businesses continue to increase prices is also going to be problematic on the demand side for inflation to start easing. On the supply side of inflation, we're talking about energy, transportation, and those input costs being too high. So that's the supply side story there. So now it's obviously really clear that inflation is the dragon that we need to tame. Okay. We absolutely need to do it, and we need to do it quickly, because if we don't do it quickly, we do run the risk of wages and a wage price spiral occurring, right? And that means that the economy will stagnate and there will be no winners as we basically take a long time to get out of that tailspin. It's very hard to pull out of that tailspin as we move into something like a wage price spiral. So it's really important that the RBA keep moving the cash rate to a point where they can tighten the economic activity and slow the economy down to get inflation in check. Now, in terms of what is my prediction with regards to what the RBA will do, well, I'll share my answer when I close out this update and I summarise my view in terms of what they'll do next. Okay, it's time to look at those monthly CPI numbers now. And what we are seeing, that the new monthly inflation indicator showed us that the inflation reading of 6.9% in annual terms in October, edging down from the 7.3% reading that we saw in September. The trimmed mean or core inflation, which is a better measure of underlying inflation pressures, declined from an annual pace of 5.4% in September to a reading of 5.3% in October. Whilst the reduction in inflation data read is never bad news considering current elevated levels, it should be treated with some caution, as this new monthly measure could be more volatile, meaning next month we might see a reading higher than even the 7.3% that we got in September. So with this new measure, we need to be looking at the trending story. So more than just month-to-month read. So we want to make sure that it's trending, because it will jump around from time to time. Additionally, it's also worth pointing out that the consumer price index basket was reweighted in this month's release to more accurately reflect spending behavior. Now, this is a regular process undertaken by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. And if we did look at the old weights and they were used, the annual inflation would be higher at a reading of 7.1. So that's obviously food for thought. So again, we're not necessarily out of the inflation woods yet. Breaking down these numbers a bit, we saw downward pressure in the areas of holiday travel. So we saw a reading of 3.7 over the year till October versus a 12.6 over the year to September. And fruit and vegetable, we saw a 9.4% reading in October versus a 17.4% reading in September. So that's putting downward pressure on that inflation story. Putting upward pressure on the CPI was the unwinding of the fuel excise cut. So that contributed to accelerating in the automotive fuel costs at 11.8%, up from 10.1% over the year to September. Let's continue on, and it's a good time to also look at retail spending. I've been banging on about retail spending and how it needs to slow down. So let's have a look at the data. October marked the first month where the headwinds of higher inflation and interest rates started to impact aggregate spending decisions, finally. And now this would usually be an indication of a deteriorating economy, but right now it's exactly what we need to see and what I've been hoping for. And it's helped obviously to curb that demand-led inflation story that we were talking about. Now, the value of spending declined 0.2 in October. This was the first in 2023 monthly retail sales declines, ending a 9-month string of increases, which saw retail surge 9.8%. Whilst it's good to see these numbers falling, our job as consumers is far from done. Spending still remains extremely elevated. By way of example, retailing was 12.5% higher than October of 2021 and a whopping 26% above pre-pandemic levels. We need to make this slowing result a trend and not just a one-off monthly result. That brings me to my point that we need to continue to keep our wallets and purses closed over the next few months. We want to send a clear message to businesses that we are going to not accept these price increases, and that will bode well for slowing down cash rate increases and, of course, on the back of slowing down inflation as those businesses can't pass on those costs to us consumers. So it's an important message that I'll keep bringing home. Let's stop that retail spending. Let's stop that consumer spending for now anyway. Okay, let's talk about employment now. And we saw that the jobs gains continues to climb in October, jumping by 32,200 to take the level of employment to a record high. The unemployment rate declined to 3.4%, the lowest level in almost 50 years in unrounded terms. The underemployment rate also declined to sit just shy of a 14-year low. Full-time job creation led the way. The number of persons employed in full-time jobs increased by 47,100 in October, taking full-time employment to a historic high and bringing the share of persons employed in full-time roles to 70%, the highest since April of 2013. Part-time staff are taking on extra hours and transitioning from part-time to full-time employment as slack in the labour market forces this absorption. It might also be driven by the need to find extra work to help with the cost of living pressures many households are facing. The absorption of slack in the labour market force is demonstrated by the decline in the underutilisation rate sitting at 9.3%, the lowest since 1982. And now to highlight the overall strength of the labour market even further, the number of persons in the labour force increased by 62,500 over the 3 months to October, compared to 9,700 over the 3 months to July, on the back of the new immigrations arriving and starting work here. Now, the standout state in the data was New South Wales, where their unemployment rate fell to an all-time record low of 3%. It's the lowest across the country. The story is also very positive, one, when we look at the employees as well. Now, when we turn our attention to the wage price index, we saw that the WPI jumped 1% over the September quarter, the fastest quarterly jump since the December quarter of 2011. This pushed the annual increase of the wage price index to 3.1%, the fastest pace in 9.5 years. If you include bonuses, the rate jumps to 3.8%, highlighting the competitiveness of the labour market and that firms have been increasingly paying bonuses and other one-off payments to attract and retain top talent. Quarterly wage growth for the private sector was 1.2%, and that was double the public sector of 0.6%. Nearly half of all private sector jobs recorded a wage increase in the September quarter, and of those, the average wage increase was 4.3%. The tightness of the labour market is expected to continue to translate into accelerations in wages growth. However, the RBA tightening cycle takes effect in slowing businesses and the economy down, and so some of this pressure will unwind on wages as we see more unemployment start to take shape as businesses are forced to accept this slowdown. Consumer sentiment data now, we see the consumer sentiment index fell sharply to 78 even in November from an 83.7 reading in October. The read is now below the trough of 79 recorded during the global financial crisis, extraordinary, I know, and near the record lows during the deep recession of the early 1990s, which had a recording of 64.6. And the initial phase of the COVID-19 pandemic, which saw a reading of 76.5, but really, really low. Although readings at this level in other times in history would spell gloom and doom, this time around it feels more like a story of consumers preparing themselves for the harder times ahead. This is, this is the right short-term attitude and obviously will help consumers slow down and stop their spending for the time being. And I suspect that the pausing of interest rates when it happens will result in an immediate spike in the numbers back into the 1980s. And if inflation continues to cool, then this number will move back towards a reading of around 100. And now how long this takes is the question that we all don't know the answer to, but we would expect that consumer sentiment will improve as we get over the hump of the slowing of the economy. Let's talk business activity now. We saw business conditions ease in October, but remain elevated at a plus 22 index points. This is above the long run average and the pre-COVID-19 peak. Conditions pull back in the retail trade and wholesale sector. Again, you think about the connection there to retail spending and that wholesale elements, that's going to continue, I suspect, in terms of on a negative trajectory. Business confidence declined by 4 points in October to a reading of a zero index reading. This is the second consecutive month of decline and has left confidence below its long-run average for the first time since December of 2021. New private capital expenditure, so CapEx, fell by 0.6 over the September quarter. This was the first quarterly decline since the September quarter of last year. Looking at current business conditions, they remain strong and capacity utilizations are around record highs. Again, on the back of that employment story we just talked about. Now, this would normally result in businesses accelerating business investment and expansion to capitalize on those strong conditions. However, this manufactured slowdown of the economy will help rein in inflation, is seeing businesses becoming more cautious. Higher interest rates and the predictions of major global downturns is weighing on business confidence looking forward. And yes, we are now starting to see that show up in the business investment data as well. Now, the slowing economic activity, from ongoing rate hikes, high inflation and slowing global economy will reduce the need for increased levels of CapEx. So instead, it will play out further and more noticeable slowing of CapEx spending in 2023. Now we want to pivot over to the property sector data. There's a fair bit of data that I want to talk to you about in this month's update. So firstly, let's take a look at the construction and approvals data as we see them. So we saw construction work done increased by 2.2% over the September quarter after falling by a revised 2% in the June quarter. This was on the back of an adverse weather, labour and material shortages being experienced in the June quarter. Looking at forward indicators, we see dwelling approvals continue to trend downwards as interest rates start to spike and take effect. Dwelling approvals fell by 6% in October, driven by an 11.3% fall in approvals for high-density dwellings in the private sector. Dwelling approvals are now 34% below their peak recorded in March of 2021. What does this mean? Well, based on forward projection, construction activity looks set to slow considerably in the second half of 2023. Now, this might be a good thing for those looking to build. As demand slows, you're also going to see hopefully cost of materials and hopefully labour costs might also retreat from their recent highs. So looking to build or renovate in late 2023 might be a thing, people. Let's look at the lending side of the equation now. We saw that housing credit expanded by 0.4 in October, the softest monthly rate since early 2021. Credit to owner-occupiers rose 0.5 in the month, 7.7% in the year, whilst credit to investors grew by only 0.3 and 6.2% in the year. It's now very clear that higher mortgage rates, the possibility of more rate increases, and in some quarters, the expectation of further price falls are impacting housing credit growth. When we look specifically at investor credit for housing, broadly speaking, it isn't accelerating yet. That's even despite the drop in dwelling prices and rental growth being recorded. So one could argue that investors are sort of saying, well, yields are going up, property prices are down, I might act now. But the result really, it's clear to me that we're seeing some investors sitting on the fence, thinking they might be able to time the market, whilst others who might see great opportunity right now have been tapped out of the market due to APRA's holding firm on their 3% buffer rates for the time being. And obviously, it would be a very frustrating story for those investors who see great opportunity in the market right now. Looking at the value of new home financing, we saw it decline by 2.7% in October, making it the ninth consecutive monthly fall. New lending is now 17.1% lower than a year ago on the back of sharp interest rate movements and reduced housing turnover and softer prices. Pretty logical. Looking at refinancing activity, however, although it did pull back by 1.1% in the month of October, it's still running hot as borrowers try and lock in the best deal as rates continue, as rates have gone up. To give you some indication of how hot it is, refinancing in October was 72% above the six-month average prior to the pandemic. So that just gives you some idea of people shopping around for a great opportunity. And that's why you should be talking to your mortgage broker about what's out there at the moment. Let's now focus on the price story. So let's run through the capital city numbers from CoreLogic for the November result. So we saw the result in Sydney. It was negative, down 1.3% for the month. Melbourne was down 0.8 for the month. Brisbane was down 2%. Adelaide was down 0.3. Perth was flat. Hobart was down 2% for the month. Darwin was down only 0.2. And Canberra was negative 1.2. That led to the combined capitals reading of negative 1.1. Combined regions were down 0.9. And that led to an overall national result of prices falling by 1% in the month. And nationally, the quarterly result is negative 3.5. Now, this is the seventh consecutive month of declines. Dwelling prices are now down 7% nationally, as I just mentioned, from their April 22 peaks. That follows a surge in national prices of 28.6 from September 2020 to April 2022. Importantly, the pace of price falls continues to ease. And this is a developing story. Since peaking at basically falling nationally at 1.6 in August, this is, you know, the slowing down is an improving story. And that's on the back of reduced listings and reduced overall supply. So people not putting their properties up for sale in the current environment. The easing in the size of the cash rate increases from early in the year. So we moved into 50 basis points increases, now down to 25. So that's probably seeing people seeing light at the end of the tunnel. Strong labour market conditions. We saw how strong the labour market conditions were earlier. And the return of immigration, which is also helping on the demand side of things. So we expect to see that to continue. So we expect to see the slowing of those prices continuing to fall. Now, it is going to be interesting to watch how demand and supply is going to play out over the short term, because at some point this pent-up demand is going to materialize. And when it does, many are going to be caught napping. And by the time they take action, they do run the risk of prices more likely to have already moved by the time they take action. So, you know, from my point of view, they're running the risk of missing getting the bottom of the market. And history tells us there's only one way you can routinely guarantee yourself in terms of getting the bottom of the market, and that's getting in before the bottom of the market arrives. It's just luck that you'll get to the bottom of the market. But if you're thinking about buying now, you're going to guarantee yourself to pick that bottom as well. So if you are looking to buy, think about it like this. If we do see a pausing in interest rates, we will see APRA change their buffer rates, and that's going to have a positive impact on demand. So the only problem is, if you're thinking like everyone else is in terms of holding off, there's potentially going to be that spike in demand where your strategy might actually backfire on you. If you're thinking about, all right, I'm just waiting. Well, if everyone else is just waiting and everyone hits the market at the same time looking for a bargain, unfortunately, you may more than likely you're going to have to pay overs to get in, which won't be the bottom then. And then you'll work out pretty quickly that it'll move into a seller's market, and ultimately you'll be competing against a lot more other people. So you need to understand that. And so that's obviously a way in which I always remind people at the end of this year, and what I always talk about in terms of the property market. There's no such thing as a typical property dwelling in Australia. There's no such thing as a typical price for that dwelling. They are just aggregates of numbers. Obviously there's different values of different prices all around Australia and different types of stock all around Australia as well. So you don't want to be fooled by that national story. You even don't want to be fooled really in some cases by the capital city story that's also been playing out there. So when you're thinking about obviously short-term price movements, that's by demand and supply. Longer-term price movements will always be a product of economic activity, human interest and human behaviour. Now, Bryce and I recently did an episode on the property couch on this. It's episode 418, where we do unpack in a lot more detail about sustainable long-term price growth performance is going to come out of sustained economic activity and that economy growing in that localized area. So check that out if you want to learn more about our theory around and our thesis around sustained longer-term capital growth. On the rental front, rental market conditions remain incredibly tight. National advertised dwelling rents rose by 0.8% in November. In annual terms, rents have surged by 10.2% over the year to November. Bearing in mind, for those of us who have long memories into the sort of 5-year, 10 years and beyond, we've actually seen sluggish rental yield growth for a long period of time. So the rental market is really just playing catch up. Let's have a look at the current rental growth story and yields around the country. We did see nationally 3.7% gross rental yields for dwellings, combined regions 4.4, combined capitals 3.5. Regional Northern Territory has excellent yields at 7.1, regional Tassie 4.4, regional WA 6.3. Regional SA 5.1, regional Queensland 4.9, regional Victoria 3.8, regional New South Wales 4%. Moving our attention to the capital cities, average rental yields in Canberra 4%, Darwin 6.3, Hobart 4%, Perth 4.6, Adelaide 3.9, Brisbane 4.1, Melbourne 3.2, and Sydney 3.1. I do expect Melbourne and Sydney rental yields to continue to keep growing reasonably strongly over the course of 2023. And it's very clear that rental yields will grow more broadly right across all areas as we see those record low vacancy rates will remain in place when we start to think about the government intervention in the lending standards. So they're blocking transactions and more buyers coming to the market. So there's no stock turnover from that point of view. You're also seeing, obviously, The cost of building new dwellings has remained elevated. So that's not stimulating developers to be able to get in there and build new stock at the moment because things are a bit too expensive. You're also seeing APRA, you know, in terms of their interventions as well, playing out. So yeah, there is really, you know, some difficult problems when it comes to adding to the supply. So I do expect to see that the undersupply of dwellings, that will be more and more reported into 2023, because at least for the next couple of years, as we basically see this story of undersupply play out as construction starts to slow. So that brings me to the end of my December update. And as I promised to give you my predictions as to what the RBA will do with rates early next year, noting that the RBA has the benefit of more data than I do in making this prediction. And I'm also making this prediction in early December. So when they do meet, they'll have obviously a lot more data available to them. But my prediction, as I sit here, as I said, in early December, is that they will pause. I do believe that they have done enough lifting of the cash rate. And now they really do need to stress test just exactly how that's impacting the households. So they have certainly made the cost of money incredibly elevated. And so if they do want this soft landing that they're talking about, then ultimately that's going to play itself out. And so that's why I believe that the sensible move from the RBA will basically be to take a pause, have a look at some of that data that is coming through. That obviously could have a positive impact on property demand and prices in the shorter term. And we may start to see slowing price declines. And certainly in some markets, we will see some price growth on the back of that. So that's always important to do. Now, of course, you know, time will be the judge in terms of when this will occur. But we must be getting close to a pause. So the probability remains higher and higher that they'll probably do a wait and see game. Now, I will be back in terms of providing my updates again next year, starting in February. So when the board meet for the first Tuesday of February, I will provide my latest update. But I always want to remind you, until then, knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it. And in closing out, I also want to wish you a very safe and enjoyable Christmas. And hopefully a very, very prosperous start to 2023. Take care, and we'll see you in the new year.
Hey guys, Bryce here again. Just want to catch you before you go and let you know, if you're new to our community, there are a lot of episodes to catch up on, but it's really important that you start from the very beginning at episode number one, because episode 1 through to 20 share all of the foundational pillars and frameworks that you need to know to get the best out of listening to this podcast. So I'd recommend that you start there. And the little tip is to maybe start on 1.5 speed. Now, for those of you that are time poor and don't have time to go back from the beginning, don't worry, we've got you covered as well, because we've created a binge guide that goes through all of the details and makes it easy for you to read and get up to speed very, very quickly. So if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au/fast-track, you will be able to download that binge guide and you will be up to speed in no time. And whilst you're there, I've got a few extra goodies for you, because we have our top 5 frameworks that you'll learn on this podcast, as well as the Make Money Simple Again ebook, which will help you with the foundations of basic money management, so you'll have everything you need to succeed in building your own lifestyle design and getting the best out of this podcast. Now, just a reminder that anything that we cover on this podcast is not considered financial advice. We certainly recommend that you get your unique circumstances looked at by your individual advisor, and everything we talk about is just general in nature. But folks, I want to encourage you again to go to thepropertycouch.com.au/fast-track. And you can go and get all those goodies and catch up right away.